On today's episode of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass takes you through the Nets' huge victory over the Denver Nuggets and breaks down Spencer Dinwiddie's all-time podcast appearance on the Wingin' It show coming up next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, your home and really repository for all Brooklyn Nets knowledge. I am your host, Josh Bass, here to talk you through a thrilling victory yesterday by the Brooklyn Nets, improving to 13-10. They have just been on fire these last few games here, really since the Kyrie Irving injury. Although we'll kind of break it down, no fault of Kyrie's even, but the ball is pinging, people are hitting shots, the defense is active, Spencer Dinwiddie is going on podcasts, even though he hasn't made the appearance on Locked On Nets yet. Maybe that will come one day. That's a bucket list guest for us. But everything is good in Nets world, excluding the Kyrie Irving consistent injury saga. Still probably another week or two before he really kind of hopefully comes back. He should be at some point getting cleared for full contact practices. You know, he started on court work but hasn't made that next leap yet. So we'll see on that. But even though Kyrie has been absent, the Nets have been stellar since he went down. So not the end of the world there. And the guy that's been behind it all, Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm down to start the Spencer Dinwiddie for the 2020 All-Star Game bandwagon. He has been phenomenal. Had another great game yesterday with 24 points and 8 assists. Didn't hit the three ball well. Only took 3 of them, which is definitely low for him. Didn't connect on any of those. But he didn't really need to because he was getting to the basket at will. 10 of 14 on two-pointers. Most of those were just kind of layups going directly at Nikola Jokic and then a little bit of Mason Plumlee as well. But it was just insane what he was able to do, including he put the Nets, he had the go-ahead basket for the Nets in the fourth quarter on a really nice drive. He just, like, the way his combination of going around the pick, kind of setting up his own defender and also the big man, and then being able to explode at the last instant, and with his combination of touch around the rim and length and speed, he's really just a unstoppable force. And I tweeted this at the Locked On Nets account. Go give us a follow there. But he is one of the best drivers I've seen in a while. You know, someone who just can get to the basket so easily. You have all these sophisticated NBA defenses that have figured out the analytics and really make a point, like the Nets do, to try to stop guys from shooting at the rim. But he's able to get there time and time again. I know he was going up against a slow-footed big man in Nikola Jokic, and I commented on this on the last podcast over the weekend, basically saying, hey, given this matchup, Dinwiddie should be able to have a lot of success against Denver, even though he didn't in the last game against them in mid-November. But he completely kind of proved that thesis right. Just dominant display. Started off the game with some great passing. He's really mastered that cross-court pass, had a couple of really nice lobs, and he was finding Garrett Temple, finding Jarrett Allen, and the Nets got off to a very fast start, and when they needed him to score, he did. Dropped 10 points in the third quarter, had some big buckets late, and to beat a team like Denver and only needing 24 points from Dinwiddie, it's a testament, one, to his play, but also what the rest of the team was able to do, and it really was a sensational performance. I thought the centers also had a really nice game. DeAndre Jordan and Jarrett Allen. Allen especially, I mean, his kind of feel for cuts have gotten a lot better. They Nets run this play all the time where Joe Harris comes around a curl after timeout play where they're inbounding the ball. And Jarrett's gotten a lot better at kind of reading when Joe's going to shoot and when it makes sense for him to cut and get an open dunk or at least have an opportunity to crash the glass. So I thought he had a really nice game and did a pretty good job on Jokic. You know, there's some threes that Jokic missed, which he usually hits. But ultimately, I think the Nets did a really good job on him, holding him only 24 points on 10 of 21 shooting. They made him work for it. And the Nets overall, I thought, played pretty well on defense, only allowed 102 points. Really, the thing that kept the Nuggets in this game was their hot three-point shooting, and that was mainly Jeremy Grant going 5-for-7 from three. It was an inauspicious start for the Nets when he banked one in from straightaway in the first quarter, and then he was just knocking down everything, and the Nets were a little late to really contest him hard. There was that one player where Torian Prince gave kind of a soft contest, and the way that Grant was shooting it, you have to get out there and run him off the line. But, you know, for a guy like him, he's improved his shooting in the last couple seasons, but you still don't, when you play a team like Denver and all the weapons they have, expect him to be able to go 5-of-7 from three and cause a lot of damage there. But the Nets did just enough to win, even though Joe Harris didn't shoot the ball as well. Their bench actually gave them some nice minutes. DeAndre was good. Musa finished the game 3-of-5 in the first half, had two really nice drives and finishes, knocked down to three. The two shots he missed were, I don't know who's telling this guy to shoot these 30-foot threes, but he just took two bombs and didn't even come close on them. If he refined his shot selection a bit more and maybe took threes that were closer to the line, he actually could be hitting a decent clip of these, because I don't think his touch is bad. It's just his shot selection, and he's always off balance. That's really the problem there. So I think he did a nice performance, and I don't really think he's in a ton of jeopardy to get cut once Chandler comes back. I think the most susceptible options are Chandler himself and also Theo Pinson, but Musa certainly hasn't done himself any favors, so nice to see him have a good game here. And Nwaba also, he had some plays late. The guy is just like, he really is a football player. He's kind of like a safety on defense and a running back on offense. Had one play where he got the rebound, just put his shoulder into someone at the other end, created space for himself, and hit a layup. He did a really nice job. And also, shout out to Kenny Atkinson. I think he has had a really good season coaching. Obviously, his play designs and play calls have been phenomenal. But what I love that he's doing this year, which he might not have done in previous years, is really optimizing his chances of winning the games by maximizing every possession. So a lot of what he's done this year is saying, when the Nets have a 2-for-1 at the end of the quarter, or even just one possession, he'll put a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie back in the game and say, hey, especially with our backups right now of Pinson and Musa, our points per possession goes so far up with Dinwiddie, it's more important to get him out there for those two or three possessions than to get them an extra 30 seconds of rest. And when you have a team that's, yes, very analytically focused like the Nets, but also extremely focused on rest and player management and making sure they get enough time to recuperate, it goes to show you that this has been a really big adjustment for Kenny to make, and it's one that's paid off a lot for the Nets. And especially in all these close games, you know, that one possession where someone gets fouled and goes to the line and makes a couple free throws, and the points per possession goes from maybe 0.2 higher, that can make a difference in a lot of these games. So it's great to see Kenny recognizing that and kind of squeezing every ounce of talent out of this Nets team right now. So I want to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie's podcast appearance on the Winging It podcast, which is one of the Ringer podcasts, Vince Carter and Annie Finberg. But first, if you're looking for some other great audio content, how about Audible? It's the time of year when everyone's traveling, running around, getting thoughtful gifts for the people that they care about the most. And for the people I care about, I try to get them an Audible membership. Now is the best time to do it. With a special offer of 53% off your first 3 months, you access an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. One of my favorites is the Jay-Z one, Made in America, by Michael Eric Dyson. And Pharrell has the foreword there. It is phenomenal and gives a ton of insight into one of the greatest rappers of certainly our generation and also all time. Right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Right now, for a limited time, that is it. Just $6.95 a month for these next 3 months. Highly recommend it. You can find everything you want there. Listen on any device, anytime, anywhere with the Audible app. It's great while you're commuting, at the gym, during holiday travels. It is so versatile, and I highly recommend it. So Spencer Dinwiddie had a podcast appearance, and one, first of all, I think it's great that he even got the nod to kind of be on that national podcast. It just goes to show that his reputation around the league has really kind of been under a meteoric rise. He's someone that's extremely respected in this league. I think a couple key takeaways that I really wanted to highlight. I think a lot of what Spencer was saying about Kenny Atkinson really rang true. I mean, he's doing a great job as an X's and O's coach, but also kind of just promoting the growth of his players, empowering them, giving them some slack to mess up. Spencer talked about how the first couple seasons in his career, when he was bouncing around Chicago and Detroit, you know, sometimes you have these coaches that are more kind of more typical, like hard-ass Scott Skiles, Thibodeau mold, and these guys just don't have the patience to let their young players develop. And any mistake, they are just pulling the young guy out right away, and that really causes young guys to be looking over their shoulder constantly, not playing free, not playing loose, not moving the ball, and that's when things get stilted and you run into trouble. And that's not the case, obviously, with Kenny. I mean, he gives the younger players, whether it's the rookies, the veterans, just a ton of rope. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Nets have such a good player development culture. Spencer also addressed Kyrie Irving and the rumors that maybe they don't like each other or one feels threatened by the other. I think, obviously, those rumors are completely asinine, and Spencer kind of just confirmed that. He did talk about how Kyrie is a unique star. He's not a cookie-cutter guy. He really is an introspective guy. But certainly the rumors there are ridiculous. And also he talked about his investment vehicle that he's been working on. Obviously, it's been a hot-button issue and very controversial. But that's probably the most fascinating part of the podcast, which comes at the end. But there's really kind of a 5 or 7 minute stretch where he just talks fully about the investment vehicle. And the one thing there, regardless whether you feel that it's something that should be allowed to happen, shouldn't, I personally think it's fine. But I get why the NBA has kind of some issue with it and wants to diligence it further. But Spencer's passion for the matter itself and why he thinks it's a good thing, and just how knowledgeable he is about all those different kind of digital currencies and tokens, it is so, so cool. And I think just getting to see someone, and really any NBA player, any athlete that people think kind of define them by their contributions on the field, they're really not that. They're fully fledged people with their own interests, much like we have outside interests outside of sports and our occupation. And it just goes to humanize Spencer even more and just give him that fully fledged character that he is, and someone who is just an awesome person and really great for basketball, even though he might not be the biggest star in the league. So all of a sudden, the Nets are at 13-10 right now, the 7th seed in the East still, but they're only a few games out of passing a few of these teams here. And I was thinking to myself today, I said, hey, when Kyrie Irving comes back, and obviously Karis comes back, and it's still going to take a while to integrate those guys, just because the Nets have been 9-3 without both Kyrie and Karis, doesn't mean that they're going to get even better necessarily right away when those guys come back. But is this Nets team, with the developments of Jarrett Allen, DeAndre kind of figuring some stuff out, getting a really good role player in Garrett Temple and integrating him in the rotation, and obviously the star power with Kyrie, is this a team that can make some noise in the playoffs? And I think, you know, the one thing about the NBA playoffs, you need guys that can get you buckets and really score again when the defenses get tighter. And I think that Kyrie Irving's obviously certainly that guy. He's a championship pedigree to prove it. Spencer Dinwiddie, with his ability to get to the rim, get fouled, hit threes off the dribble and the catch, I think he is that guy also. And the one I'm least bullish about is Karis. And he had a great series against Philly last year, who has an excellent defense, fast, athletic, big. So you definitely know the potential is there for him. He just needs to put it together. So that makes me feel really good about the Nets. Obviously, defensively is what I have concerns about. I think they have the rim protection. But when you are the Nets and you need guys to stop these really good, high-powered wings like a Giannis, like a Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward, Jimmy Butler, even a Tobias Harris could give the Nets problems, Pascal Siakam, all the top teams in the East have a really good wing scorer. And the Nets' biggest Achilles heel right now is that they don't have anyone that can consistently not even shut those guys down, but at least be a bother there. And these guys can really have good games against the Nets. And also any smaller guard is going to have a field day as well, unless you're kind of sacrificing offense for defense and putting out a guy like a David Nwaba, who, while I love him, is not the offensive player anywhere near it that Caris and Spencer and Kyrie are. So I think kind of a lack of top-end two-way talent is going to do this team in this year, but it's interesting food for thought. And I think, let's say 10 games ago when everyone thought the world was falling down, no one was even thinking that on December 9th we'd be having this conversation, but it just goes to show you how quickly things change in the NBA. Of course, subscribe to the podcast. Marcus will be back with us next time. This will be my last solo episode in a while. So subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, and Spotify. If you're a Spotify listener, how about you Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year? Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live and at Locked On Nets on Twitter, and we'll share and retweet, and we'd love to see who you guys are listening to on the network besides your boys over at the Locked On Podcast Network. And until next time, be well.